Bray Show, the Round Table of Justice.
Well, good morning and welcome to Monday morning, 10 o'clock Round Table of Justice. Every Monday, we take an hour, we stop, and we chat about something that's justice-related. It could be crime stories. It could be bringing in a couple of lawyers. We've had judges. We've had police officers. We've had criminologists. And today, we've got a variety of guests that are joining us for our hour chat. This is going to be a good one, focused on technology in justice and I would say more predominantly focused on community safety. So how is technology helping in crime fighting? And I'll tell you, I think back to, before I introduce my guests, I have to tell you, this is one of many stories I was thinking about on the weekend prior to this segment. When I was a young cop, if you got assigned a warrant, because sometimes that would happen, they'd say, okay, Evan, we've got a warrant here for Joe Smith. We want you to go find Joe. He's wanted for threatening. I would take the warrant, and of course, it was a paper copy warrant. We would go up to our identification section in the police service. I would find the S drawer, S for Smith, because Joe Smith is who I'm looking for. Open the drawer, find Joe's file, if he had a file, pull out a little brown envelope that contained multiple mugshots of Joe Smith from the last time he was arrested. I would pull a mugshot out and I would take it with me as I was trying to execute the warrant because we'd need to know what Joe Smith looked like. And I remember thinking, boy, wouldn't it be nice if we could just have like a computer that we could bring up the picture of Joe Smith without having to pull the photo. By the way, if the photo in the envelope was the last one, because there was always multiple copies, you had to handwrite a note. We didn't even have email when I started. You had to handwrite a note to the sergeant in charge of IDENT to print more copies of Joe Smith to put in the folder. I mean, that's a stupid, goofy example, but the reality is, I mean, now with all of the technology that's available in the vehicles, you do bring up not only Joe Smith's picture, but you bring up the record. You can bring up any information that you like. It's really, I mean, policing has transformed because of technology. And there's a variety of different ways that this happens. And this is the topic of conversation we're having today on the Round Table of Justice. And I'm happy to say we've got a variety of guests that are joining us today. And each guest brings a different perspective. They come at it from a different angle. And I am looking forward to this conversation. So let me introduce who we've got joining us today, starting with a gentleman by the name of Vishal Dhir. Vishal, I've actually had the opportunity to work with off and on through the years. He is the Axon Senior Vice President of the Commonwealth in Americas. Axon is a company that has done a ton of groundbreaking work when it comes to technology and ultimately have now become what I would call the global leader, I think, in public safety. They provide technology of all sorts that help police and including police here in Saskatchewan. Vishal, thank you for joining us by phone today. Great to have you here.
Thanks, Evan. Really excited about the conversation and looking forward to chatting again as well.
My next guest is Ian Adams. Ian is an assistant professor in the Department of Criminology and Criminal Justice at the University of South Carolina. Ian and his team have done all kinds of work, experimental trials, for example, of AI-assisted report writing, AI auditing of body-worn cameras, and they're doing some ongoing work in the area of drones as first responders, and it'll be fascinating to have someone come at this from the angle and perspective of someone who works in the education field, comes at it from the academic and research standpoint. Ian Adams, thank you so much for joining us today.
Really happy to be here. Thank you so much.
And joining me in studio, a former coworker of mine, young fella Matt Carlton, who works at the Regina Police Service. He is a BISDM system analyst with the Regina Police Service and has become very involved in all different aspects of embracing technology within a police service. So this is kind of the operational side of how it's used. Matt Carlton in studio. Thank you for being here.
Great to be here, Evan. Thank you so much. Although not sure how young I'm feeling nowadays, but well, thanks for that comment.
When you compare to me, I look at you, I was going to say old coworker, but I said former because to me, you are young, Matt. And good to have you here. So Ian, maybe I'll start with you as I look at some of the work that you and your team have done from a criminology standpoint. Just talk to me a little bit about how swiftly technology is advancing and some of the things that you and your team are doing seem like they are almost out of a sci-fi movie rather than something that would be deployed in modern-day policing.
Well, thanks for that, Evan. We've been working in the body camera space since, for almost a decade now. As you mentioned, Axon is kind of the world leader there, we've really seen over the last 10 years body cameras specifically probably be the fastest adoption in technology that we've seen in policing. Our interest is always in trying to validate the effects of these technologies for police agencies. When body cameras first came out, there was a lot of hope that they might reduce use of force, for example. That didn't end up being sort of the dominant effect of the technology, although they did have a lot of unintended effects across policing. And so sort of from the scientific standpoint, we're always interested in doing the most rigorous, careful examination of that work possible. It sounds like you're referencing one of our studies from late last year, where, for example, we wanted to know more about AI report writing. These are tools that assist officers in helping craft the narratives and arrest reports that sort of form the basis of a lot of the criminal justice system as far as police activity goes. Mm-hmm. And what we found was that despite sort of the hope that it might save a lot of time for officers, that's not what we actually saw in this agency. The time savings just weren't there. We have another study that isn't published yet but is now under review that looks at how those same officers, though, reacted to the tools. And surprisingly, they're quite positive. I think that one thing we're seeing with police agencies is a lot of excitement around this technology. They're quite open to it, and they're looking for help. So there's a lot more to go, but that's sort of like the entry-level welcome to the research world.
Yes, Ian Adams, one of my guests, assistant professor in the Department of Criminology and Criminal Justice at the University of South Carolina. So, Vishal, I'll come to you next. You are a senior vice president in Axon, which is a service provider company out of a variety of different technologies. Body-worn camera is one of them. I know Taser is a big part of your business, but branching out well beyond that as well. How important are academic researchers like Ian and his team at the University of South Carolina, along with the frontline officers and police services? How does that come together, Vishal, and help you drive and make the improvements in the technology that you provide to agencies?
I think it's extremely important. I mean, one of the areas that we're really proud of at Axon is the partnership that we've created with frontline officers as well as academia to help support the research on how effective the tools can be. And we've partnered with a lot of agencies. Just speaking on that AI one that Ian just mentioned, a number of our agencies over the last year have seen a huge increase in the time savings that they've seen with the Draft One, which is our AI reporting tool. Just last year, we've had 100,000 incident reports, and we saved officers about 2.2 million minutes. It was on average about 24 minutes per report that was written that was given to us directly from the officers and the time savings. And then just last week as well at our user conference, we had an agency speaking about AI Draft One report writing, and they were mentioning that they were finding from a policy side of things, so similar to what Ian mentioned around the unintended consequences around body worn, they were finding that they didn't really have policy and training on how they should be writing reports for Crown to be accepting of them, because they were having a range of different savings from 70% down to about 20%. So it kind of made them relook at how are they doing officer training and how are they evaluating report writing before an officer gets out to the scene. So all these sorts of things come together with your question in terms of how important academia as well as the frontline officer response. It's extremely important to what we do. And then we're always kind of iterating on what we do as well. One of the key areas that we focus on a lot is what we call voice of customer at Axon. So we spend a ton of time engaging with customers on one-to-one conversations or forums like our user group. And then broader forums, like we had our customer user group called Axon Week. We get a bunch of customers together from all sorts of agencies globally, and they share input on what they want to do, what they want to see, and then how we can improve what we're doing from a technology standpoint that's also being responsible for the community side of things as well.
Mm-hmm. Vishal Dhir is one of three guests that I've got in. Vishal is with Axon. I've got Ian Adams, who is with the University of South Carolina, and Matt Carlton, a business system analyst with the Regina Police Service. We're going to take our first break. When we come back, we'll get into some actual applications. So how are police services, how are frontline agencies using some of this technology? What are the concerns that come up, and how are companies adapting to concerns to make sure that these pass the test in court, for example, pass the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, any of the other concerns that may come forward? This is the topic of discussion today on the Roundtable of Justice, Technology in Policing. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
All right. The Evan Bray Show. The Roundtable of Justice.
So it's interesting today on the Roundtable of Justice, we're talking about technology, and we've pulled together guests that come at it from a few different angles. So you've got Ian Adams, who's the assistant professor in the Department of Criminology and Criminal Justice at the University of South Carolina. So that's the academic and research side, which informs service providers like Axon. And with us today, Vishal Dhir, Axon Senior Vice President of the Commonwealth and Americas. And that in turn goes down to the frontline users, which is the police services. And joining us from the Regina Police Service today is Matt Carlton, a business system analyst. Matt, I love the fact you're a crime fighter, but you're not a police officer. How do you like this role?
I love it, Evan. Yeah. Honestly, technology has taken a very large role in policing today, more so than it ever has, as I'm sure you can recall back to your early days as a police officer. And my role allows me to connect police officers and policing at large with the technology that they need to do their jobs better and help keep communities safer, ultimately.
So can you give me an example, Matt, of some of the, I know Regina Police Service used a number of Axon technologies in everyday policing. What are some examples in which some efficiencies have been found through the products?
Oh, absolutely. Axon has been a critical partner for us for a while now, actually, as early as 2018, I believe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the examples of efficiencies are numerous. The biggest one that comes to mind is we use their AI transcription service. So as you would know from back in the day, you do a 6-hour interview, you'd send that off to a person who would hand type it as they listen to it and take at least 6 hours to do that. But now the officers or civilians within those units can easily click a button and AI transcribes the entire interview in, you know, mere percentage of the time it used to take us.
We're sitting face to face officer and someone who's being interviewed for, let's say, a murder. And mm-hmm. like you said, that interview can take 6 hours. Sometimes it can be more. The old process was that we had civilian police personnel that would watch the video and literally type and transcribe word for word what was said in that entire interaction. You're telling me now that's all done differently.
Most of it is, yeah. Wow. Still requires a human to review the end results.
Right,
but
to make sure
more
that it's
quality
accurate.
And assurance versus direct input.
And I mean, the time saving has to be crazy.
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
Okay, what are a couple of other examples?
Axon has also allowed us to share disclosure packages with the prosecutors and the Ministry of Justice directly. Only on certain files and crime types. But again, you're saving disks, you're saving things going back and forth, higher security, higher efficiency, and just less administration overall.
So is this like a cloud-based server that it's shared through?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So Vishal, as you work with frontline agencies, I'm guessing you get from time to time requests to adapt it or make a tweak here. Is that how you continue to get better with the products than the service you provide frontline agencies?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny because you mentioned the word sci-fi earlier, and one of the things, it always looks like we're innovating for a lot of the future things, but a couple of areas that we do focus on is just like the foundational things, similar to the story that you opened up with, like just making looking at a simple file easier or searching for that easier. We go on ride-alongs. We talk to officers regularly. Our CEO, Rick, he's our founder as well, and he always mentions like our failures to over-engineer things early on, as when we started as Taser International, but when we started really listening to our customers and understanding some of the problem sets and then looking at it in a different way. So I think a lot of times what happens is if you're in policing for a long time, you're thinking about solving that problem in the constraints of your policing world. Whereas when you come to companies with like Axon, where you can describe a problem, we're thinking about it kind of outside of the box because we don't have that historical institutional knowledge that you might have during your policing career. So we can think about it a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we think about solving those problems, it kind of translates into these new feature sets. The transcription one that Matt brought up is a great example. And then it kind of referenced Ian's earlier comment about unintended consequences. I was actually part of the group that was initially launching transcription, and it was great because it came from a lot of our Canadian customers. And one of the unintended consequences of transcription was that because it was automated, one of the transcribers said to us that from a mental health side of things, not just the time savings, it was a huge impact because they didn't have to listen to that call of that child screaming in the background 8 or 9 times anymore. It was like 1 or 2 times that they can review the transcript, then move on to the next interview or the call to service that they had to transcribe. So it's not even a time saving thing that we're looking at with a lot of these tools anymore. It's the mental health aspect and the burnout aspect that we hear from officers all the time, or dispatch service members, any of those kind of civilian members that are involved as well that this technology is impacting.
Vishal, I want to talk about, because it's sometimes not finding solutions to problems that had no technology, but it's taking existing pieces of technology and making improvements. So if I look at body-worn cameras, which Axon is a provider of across Canada and across the world, what are some improvements you've been able to make to the body-worn cameras that have been beneficial?
One of the key areas that we focused on was bringing AI to the body-worn camera itself. So just a couple of weeks ago, we launched our AI assistant that we've launched on the body camera. So officers from their agency, they can upload their policy or protocols. So as they're going to a call to service, say, for instance, I'm going to a domestic call. At that time, I can ask my body-worn camera, like, what are the protocols? What is the policy? What are the things that I need to do on that call to service to ensure that I have all the right information available for me? And my body camera will be able to interact with me so that you can have a voice-enabled AI companion that really shares, like, support with that officer on their call to service. Another one we're really excited about is adding a capability of translation so that when an officer goes to a scene where someone is speaking a different language, the camera right now can detect up to 50 languages, repeat it back to the officer in English, and then repeat back to the person in crisis or the person that had the call to service in their language, and they can have an interaction right through the body camera. So it's not just the camera as a tool to capture information now, but it's really becoming this all-encompassing assistant that we can keep adding capabilities to. And then that extends beyond the use of the body-worn camera as well when we think about evidence collection and how to process that information for Crown too.
This is fascinating stuff. We're going to take our next break. I want to bring Ian Adams back into the conversation after the break because all of these benefits are groundbreaking in many ways, but I also wonder about the testing that has to be done to ensure that they stand up against everything from the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms to even court testimony. Is there bias built into AI that we're worried about? What are some of the possible challenges and how are those being looked at? That's what we'll talk about when we come back on the Roundtable of Justice today, focused on advances in technology here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
All right. The Evan Bray Show. The Roundtable of Justice.
It's a great lineup today on the Roundtable of Justice. Ian Adams, Assistant Professor in the Department of Criminology and Criminal Justice at the University of South Carolina. Vishal Dhir, who is Axon Senior Vice President of the Commonwealth and Americas. And Matt Carlton, Business System Analyst with the Regina Police Service. We're talking about technology. Ian, I want to come back to you. When we think about technology, especially let's use AI, artificial intelligence, as an example, there can be concerns that come up with that, even outside of the justice world, whether it comes to data privacy, bias in AI algorithms. Is that something you and your team have talked about, contemplated? How does that play itself out in the justice world?
Yeah, great question, and it's one that comes up in almost every conversation. You know, artificial intelligence might seem magic, but it isn't. It really does, like any other technology, depend a great deal on its use case, the people building it, and ultimately the question that we have to be asking when it comes to these biases is compared to what, right? Is it biased compared to humans making similar decisions? Are we making sure that humans are in the loop of those decisions so that we can counter any unintended biases? I think we have a long way to go. The research space, as far as it's applied, this applied technology in the policing environment, is still very, very new. Mm-hmm. We're now seeing sort of the first published studies on this sort of thing. So it's certainly front of mind. And I think, you know, with my scientific hat on, we need to know more. From the police perspective, you know, before I was got hit in the head too many times and they made me become a professor, I was a cop too. And so I was a very early adopter, for example, of then taser body cameras. And my goal and my team's goal is always to keep that person in mind and provide the best information we can about what's true in the world as far as what promises are being made about that technology. So that's where our focus remains.
I love it. From a service provider standpoint, Vishal, Axon is a global leader when it comes to this sort of thing. So how have you experienced challenges, whether it be bias through AI algorithms or data privacy in the work that you do? How have you adapted to try and counteract that and making sure that it stands the test that it would need to in a court case, for example?
Yeah, I think one of the most important things that we invested on early and has been kind of a core tenet at Axon has been just not to do any harm to the officer or the community. And it starts with getting the right privacy, security, and compliance pieces right, both by from like a law side of things, but also what feels right in terms of what we can be doing for the community. One of the values that we have at Axon is win right. One of the areas that we know with technology, it can be a slippery slope. So we put together a ethics and equity advisory council. And then what that EAC does with us is that it's mixed up of different stakeholders from industry experts, academics, policymakers, and public safety and community representation. From there, we share what we're doing from a technology side of things, share what sort of concerns that they have with our product team. So they're almost like a level of defense before we launch out any new innovations to share, these are the conceptual things that we're thinking about. This is what we're hearing is interesting to the industry. What sort of things should we be considering? And then going back to the comments earlier about the voice of the customer, we spend a lot of time trying to understand, like, where could this be a challenge? Where can we meet with community leaders? I've spent a personal lot of time around just meeting with community leaders and impact of different marginalized communities and understanding what they understand and know about the technology and what they want to learn more about and what forums we can share that in, because a lot of it comes in education process. I know when I first got a call from Taser International, I said, there's no way I was going to be working for a weapons company. But then when they shared a little bit more about how the Taser works and the impact that it's had on policing, I was really bought in, and now it's probably the thing I talk about the most and the most excited I am about some of our product lines. So a lot of that comes from thinking about innovation in a responsible format, but thinking about that officer and that community member or that potential person in crisis that they could be dealing with and how we're not going to introduce any harm in that.
It's a fascinating topic, and I want to bring Matt into this conversation. From a user standpoint, when we talk about standing the test in court and standing up against the charter, there's lots of process improvements that have been made. I think about our evidence management that is used at the Regina Police Service, how we gather evidence, report writing, going to a digital platform that I would suggest has probably enhanced the standard that you get in a court case. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, absolutely, Evan. It's, you know better than most that, you know, public trust and accountability is essential when it comes to evaluating any tools that police officers are going to use to enhance their service delivery. And we need to be cognizant of that. And we are. And in just to speak to Vishal's point, right, just like they have an advisory committee on AI, the Regina Police Service has also very recently established an AI governance committee, because we need to know what these tools do, where they're going to go, and how to use them responsibly, and even when not to use them, right? Just to maintain that public trust and accountability. But speaking to, you know, when it comes to evidence itself, we want it to be accountable and understand that the evidence hasn't been tampered with, touched, lost, or edited in any way. Mm-hmm. And Axon, again, has many tools within their platform to ensure that there is a very clear audit log of what evidence is, where it's been, how it's been touched, and who's viewing it. And that's critical.
I think about supervisors used to be responsible for taking crime scene photos if it was not a major crime scene. So the supervisor would go out and, you know, if someone did damage to a door, they'd take pictures. They would then put the film in an envelope, send it to IDENT. When we advanced to digital cameras, then it's you put the little USB or whatever into the envelope, send it to IDENT. Now it can be downloaded straight onto the platform, right? So there's it's not passing through multiple hands. I feel like even just the continuity of evidence through that process has to be better for courts.
You said it perfectly, right? We know who's handled it, we know who's viewed it, and we know what they're doing with it.
Right.
And that's essential to ensuring, you know, evidence is valid.
We've only got a couple minutes left before our last break. Ian, I want to come back to you. You and your team are doing some work with drones. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, drones have already seen some use in policing for several years, but it's becoming adopted in a more systematic way at this time. One of the big ways that has really taken off just in the last year is thinking about them as drones as first responders. What this means is, in essence, there are a variety of calls where either a drone can replace an officer. Think about, like, hey, there's a call about an abandoned car. Right? Maybe we can just send a drone there instead of routing an officer for 20 minutes out into an abandoned part of town. Or the drone could be seen as an information gatherer, and it can get there on scene and provide sort of eyes in the sky for responding officers. Both ways are important. One of the big hopes for this type of technology is that, again, it can cut down on officer response time. So, for example, in one of the cities that we're studying, on average, from the time the 911 call is picked up, they're able to have a drone overhead in just 70 seconds.
Wow.
70 seconds. That's incredible, right? What's left unknown at this point, and what we hope to answer, is, again, experimentally, does this actually save time on the call response overall? And then does it free up officers then for other calls where they can reduce that call response time as well? We hope to have that up and running here in the next 30 days or so and answers by the end of the summer. So I'm really excited about that project.
I can't help but think it would also help in officer safety. If you're getting a drone on scene that quick, eyes on the scene, officers have a better understanding and can see what they're coming into. Vishal, as we are close to our next break here, can you quickly talk about the ways in which Axon is using, deploying, and working with agencies when it comes to drones?
Yeah, so we've launched with, we have a program called Axon Air, and that encompasses our drone program. And it's everything from just the software to manage the pilot information so that there's a lot of data that needs to be collected when a police agency uses a drone in response to any sort of incident. So we help with the software side of things. We've partnered with drone companies as well to offer drones. And then to Ian's point about drone as a first responder, We partner with a company as well with a drone as a first responder where we can actually dock and have autonomous drones be the first to the scene to the similar examples that Ian mentioned. I think another critical aspect of all those is just from things that cause that might not necessarily need a police response right away, but just getting the eyes from an incident command side of things is really critical in critical timing. And that's where a drone can be very effective, is to understand what is going on at an incident, get the eyes out there and really understand how that situation could be navigated through much quicker than a police car trying to go through traffic. So those are areas that we're starting to see a lot of attention to. So even like public order management, where you can set a drone over certain areas to see if there's anything going on, where you might reroute traffic so that you're not having an impact on the city if there's a car accident or something like that, where a police is, or first responder is usually called to, where there's opportunities to save time and be more effective in the response. That's how we're seeing drones being used, from everything from officer-led to drone as a first responder in an autonomous way as well.
Matt, we've got about 1 minute. Can you just touch on some of the ways operationally Regina Police Service using drones currently?
Absolutely. Vishal and Ian really hit the nail on the head. We have drones in our specialty units and available to patrol and space clearing, right? You roll up onto a a house with suspected occupants, a barricade potentially. You don't know where they are.
So there's a possibility of a gun in the house, someone holding hostages.
Any unknowns, right? And instead of putting an officer in the, you know, in danger, send a drone in. There's drones you can throw through windows, very rugged, and they can just clear the space and keep the officers safe and from the car or wherever they're operating it from.
Also, I know, for example, processing scenes, including accident scenes, drones can be very beneficial there.
Oh, yeah, totally. I know even Axon has the drone that you can tether to the ground, shoot up into the sky, and it can hover there for as long as you need.
Right.
And it's infrared, thermals, everything. So absolutely.
Okay, we're going to take our last break. We come back, we'll give each of our guests about a minute and a half to talk about where they see technology going. So where we are today, what is it going to look like in a decade from now or two decades from now from a technology standpoint? The Roundtable of Justice wraps up next here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.
All right. The Evan Bray Show. The Roundtable of Justice.
Well, today on the Roundtable of Justice, it's been a great chat about technology and how business is being changed in policing and community safety. Three great guests, and I'm going to give each of them a minute, minute and a half to talk about what the future holds. What do we see in the next decade or so when it comes to technological advancements in crime fighting, in policing? Ian Adams, I'll start with you.
Well, thanks. And I appreciate the invitation. The answer to this is both. There's some things that are pretty easy to predict and then a whole lot more that are nearly impossible. Evan, you know as well as anybody, you know, when I started 20 years ago, I got issued a map book about how to get around a city. It was pretty easy to predict that maybe GPSs would make that a lot quicker. It was almost impossible to predict, though, that the same satellites that enabled GPS would be used to bounce, child pornography around the world. We just don't know. I sometimes tell agencies we're at the pager stage of AI right now. The next 20 to 30 years will be impossible. So the best we can do is be really clear about what we're trying to get out of the technology and then do really careful testing, to see if we actually achieve those goals, get rid of what isn't achieving those goals and, keep what is. So I think over the next, 5 to 10 years, I've seen really exciting technology demos of things like smart glasses for police officers, personal drones that hover around the officer as they exit a vehicle. The list is almost endless in terms of the actual products that we'll see. But overall, we can be sure of one thing. Every new technology gets adopted very, very quickly into new crimes. And agencies are on the front lines of experiencing and investigating and seeing those crimes for the first time. So police agencies will continue to be very quick adopters, very nimble in what they and how they react to their world. And technology is going to continue to play a huge part of that.
Vishal, same question to you. What do you see in the next decade?
Yeah, I think the next 6 months is probably harder to predict than the next decade. But with just how fast AI and technology is moving, it's moving at an exponential rate. I think for us, the goal is intentional, like responsible innovation that's going to keep moving public safety forward. Our goal is always to make things more effective for frontline officers so that they can have a better response to a person in crisis, help reduce paperwork, and then faster outcomes for justice. So how we enable AI tools to have better information for an incident commander, how to give better information to the officer that might be going to a call to service or coming to a scene. How do we make that information so digestible and easier to package for the Crown to have court cases move faster? So as we kind of pull the thread of public safety, how can we help with translating the evidence that they're collecting faster to the reports that need to be done, to the Crown cases that need to be built, to prosecutions to happen faster, and then all the sensors around it? Ian mentioned having drones around officers, keep enhancing our body cameras with AI technology to have better outcomes for the officer as well as the person in crisis so that they can have more of a coach that's available to them for a scene that they haven't seen before with an AI-enabled assistant. Like those are the types of things that I think we're going to continue to work towards, and a really heavy emphasis on just intentional response for an officer doing the most effective job that they can in those critical situations where it's so stressful for them that we want to give them the best opportunity to serve our public and our community the best.
Matt.
So we're going to continue to leverage AI on that.
Last word to you, Matt. What do you see in the next decade?
Yeah, they've said it both. We don't know, but what we do know from my experience and firsthand experience, it will play a bigger role in policing, just like it has up to this point. And that's exciting. I think it's a responsibility of each law enforcement agency to balance the use of these tools with keeping our citizens' right to privacy and safety and ensure that these are tools that actually enhance public safety. But one homegrown initiative I'd love to share with you, Evan, that we're doing and that the Regina Police Service is leading the nation is in our biometric monitoring in our detention block. We have actual sensors within each cell that monitors the health and wellness of each detainee that we bring in. And we have just seen this gain an immense amount of popularity across the country. We've done countless interviews, and this is very encouraging as many other agencies look at it and look to bring this online because it matters.
Yeah, and there's such a risk in that detention center. So anything you can do to mitigate the risk, especially through the use of technology, is appreciated. This has been great. Ian Adams, University of South Carolina, thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much, sir.
Vishal Dhir with Axon, appreciate you giving us an hour of your time today, Vishal.
Thank you so much for having me.
And in studio, Matt Carlton with the Regina Police Service. Thanks for joining the conversation.
Great to be here.
Every week, Roundtable of Justice, 10 o'clock Mondays. We'll be back again next week with another edition here on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.